So I have no disclosures to share with y'all. And this is just a roadmap of what I want to take y'all through over the next 14 minutes now. And we'll start with a little bit of background on the project. So for those of you who are not familiar with the Asian American Native Hawaiian Pacific Honor Community, we are one of the fastest growing groups in the country when you look at the amount of population growth that we've had. From the 2000 census to the 2010 census, our population grew by, I believe, over 2%. And we are not a homogenous community. We're very heterogeneous, like many other racial ethnic communities, speaking a number of different languages and dialects and actually represented by a number of distinct ethnic groups. What we often suffer from is a model minority misperception where people think that we aren't impacted by health inequities or that all of us are well educated and we have these high incomes. And the truth is when you actually disaggregate the data out by distinct ethnic groups, you actually see different patterns emerge that potentially contribute to some very significant health inequities within our community. And the final piece is when you look at many of the interventions that have been targeted to improve health equity, they don't always reach Asian American Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander communities, and a key part of that is when you look at the levels of limited English proficiency within our community. As many as 1 in 3 Asian American Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders doesn't speak English well, and this can definitely impact the reach and success of your public health messages if they aren't translated into the various NHPI languages. So what was the STRIVE project? The acronyms at the top of the page, we love playing with acronyms at my organization. And what we were was one of 6 national networks that was funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for their REACH program, which has a long history of about just over a decade of looking at racial and ethnic approaches towards community health. This particular project was co-led by my organization, the Asian and Pacific Islander American Health Forum, which is a national policy and advocacy organization that's about 30 years old. And our co-lead was the Center for Studies on Asian American Health at NYU Medical. And I think what was unique about our collaborative was that CISA is an academic research institution and a learning institution, and we as a policy and advocacy organization really brought together the best aspects of our collective work. And hopefully, through that combined experience, had the opportunity to really share some of our lessons learned with our 15 partners in this. And our focus for this project was to look at chronic disease within Asian American Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander communities. So our funding period was fairly short. REACH was initially intended to be a 5-year project. It was funded by the Prevention and Public Health Fund. And after 1 year, we were notified that the Prevention and Public Health Fund was being line item adjusted, if you will, to other focal areas, important focal areas such as the ongoing implementation of the Affordable Care Act. But what it meant for us was we didn't have the full opportunity to implement this project. But even with that, the time that we did have, we made the best use of. And in that time period, we subcontracted with 15 non-governmental organizations to the tune of about $100K to $300K each to work in partnership with us. And each of these projects had a specific structural intervention that they were looking at in terms of either physical inactivity or poor nutrition. Our partners themselves had even less time than we did. They only had 7 to 13 months to implement their work. And for those of you who are familiar with trying to change complex public health issues, we know that that's not a whole heck of a lot of time. But it is pretty amazing what our partners were able to do in that short period of time. And given that short period of time, what we wanted to make sure that we were doing was providing our partners with the tools to ensure that their collaborations were as effective as possible. Much of those tools that we shared with them were from CDC's long history of a REACH approach. The circle that you see on the screen represents the specific REACH project that we were funded under. And so the hallmark of CDC's REACH approach that we worked on was using a tool called CHANGE, which stands for Community Health Assessment and Group Evaluation, which is a whole series of spreadsheets and Excel documents that have a number of indicators where you convene a multi-sector partnership. So in many of our NGOs' cases, they consisted of local community-based organizations, private businesses, faith institutions, educational institutions, local officials, and the local and state governments to undertake a community health assessment and policy scan. And so for that purposes, they use this change tool to identify potential policy, structural, and environmental improvements that they could focus on. Coming out of that change process, they collectively developed with their partnerships a community action plan that incorporated evidence-based structural interventions. So given the title of this convening around collective impact, I wanted to take an opportunity to also talk about FSG's collective impact framework. And can I just see by show of hands how many folks are familiar with FSG's work? I'm going to take a little bit of time then to go through it. So FSG is a not-for-profit consulting group. I have no affiliation with them, so remember, nothing to disclose. But in just 3-4 years ago, they came out with an article in Stanford Social Innovation Review where they described this framework called collective impact, which some have called a new way of thinking about collaborations. And I think the hallmark of collective impact is where you're looking at a complex problem and you're bringing together diverse partners to try to resolve that problem. I often think of collective impact as cilantro, and the people that I talk to about collective impact, people either really love it or they really hate it. I'm on the side of liking cilantro, so that might color some of what I share with you this morning. So for collective impact, what FSG puts forward is that there's 5 conditions for collective impact success. And I think it's actually very similar to what y'all were sharing in terms of strong collaborations and strong partnerships. The first is having a common agenda, and so collective agreement on what the problem is and collective agreement on what your potential solution is going to be. The second piece is having shared measurements, and so a common set of indicators that we're all using to benchmark our progress together. The third is a mutually reinforcing set of activities that are implemented by diverse multi-sector stakeholders, and that's just recognizing that each of us plays an important part in resolving complex social problems. The fourth piece is around continuous communication. I think that's an obvious, but the hallmark of continuous communication in a collective impact framework is that that communication not only helps you implement the work that you're doing, but it helps to reinforce trust and mutual respect among your partners. And then the final piece, which is perhaps special to collective impact, is this concept of a backbone institution, where you actually have dedicated staff whose sole task it is to support the work of the collaboration as well as the viability of the partners. So as we were going through our 7 to 13 month period with our partners, we were ramping up and doing technical assistance with them. We were learning about collective impact ourselves, and we found that there were actually a lot of similarities between the change tool that was developed by CDC as well as the collective impact framework that was developed by FSG. And I put forward these next couple of slides with the caveat that oftentimes, this is like the DSM, you see something in a book and you can say, oh yeah, that's me. And so I want to definitely say that not every collaboration should strive to be about collective impact, and not every complex social problem requires a collective impact approach. But some of the parallels that we saw between CDC's REACH approach and collective impact are indicated by the arrows that you see on the screen. So having a common agenda really tied in with these first 3 deliverables that we asked of our NGO partners. Having shared measurement really came up as we looked at all the different indicators within the change tool during that community health assessment and policy scan. Having the reinforcing activities was really demonstrated by the community action plans that were implemented by the multi-sector partnerships. Continuous communication was also demonstrated by the partnerships. And finally, the backbone institutions interwove themselves across all 4 of those deliverables. And for CISA and the Health Forum, we thought of ourselves as the backbone institutions for these 15 NGO partners. We dedicated staff to be project officers to help ensure that folks were delivering their work on time. But we also dedicated staff to address some of their organizational infrastructure and development needs. So for example, during this time period, one of our organizations that we partnered with experienced an executive transition position. And so we actually supported them in going through an executive search process. So in the time that I have remaining, I'll talk a little bit more about the work that we did and some of the specific accomplishments of our partners. So again, a very rapid timeline, 2 years for us at Health Forum and CESA, 7 to 13 months for our NGO partners, and you see that reflected on the screen. These are the different 15 NGO partners that we had. So each of these organizations served as the lead organization for their multi-sector partnership. For those of you who are more graphically oriented, here's the same information in map format. And I'll just highlight very briefly some of the specific work of three of our partners. Asian Services in Action out of Cleveland, Ohio, had the fortunate opportunity to be convening their coalition at a time where the city was developing a new Asian neighborhood. And so they were able to work with the city planners to incorporate bike lanes into that neighborhood development. United Sikhs is an organization out of New York, but they did their work in New Jersey with Gurdwaras, the religious institution of the Sikh religion. And as many religious institutions, there is a tradition of communal meals that's actually woven into to the Sikh religion. In this particular case, it's called langar. And part of the thought of langar is that you're not able to really learn about your religion if you come with an empty stomach. Unfortunately, much of the meals that they serve at Langar are considered celebration foods, things that in the past were high fat, high salt, you know, the things that we only ate once or twice a year, but in places like the U.S., our celebration foods have actually become our everyday foods. And so part of their work was to work with these Gurdwaras to establish nutritional procurement policies and to offer healthy options during Langar. And then finally, Kukua Kalihi Valley, which is based in Hawaii. We often think of Hawaii as, you know, as tropical paradise with fish and tropical fruits. And the reality for Kukua Kalihi Valley was that 70%, I believe, of their clients are actually living at the poverty level or below the federal poverty level and don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And so what Kukua Kalihi Valley worked on was an amazing 100-acre nature preserve that incorporates a community garden, making those fresh fruits and vegetables available through a farmer's market system, and also ensuring that SNAP EBT cards were eligible to be used at those community gardens, at those farmer's markets. So what I want to leave you with is just a couple of our lessons learned and next steps. Results-wise, just from our vantage point, our NGO partners really proved that NGOs can play an effective role in bringing together multi-sector partners. We had over 287 individuals and organizations participate in the collaborations across the country. And collectively across our 15 partners, they reached nearly 1.5 million individuals through some of these structural interventions that you see on the screen. NGOs are often thought of just being part of those multi-sector partnerships, but I think our experiences have demonstrated that they can really lead them. In the 7 to 13 months that we had, I think we continue to recognize that policy systems and environmental changes take time, especially if we're focused on sustainability. And because the project has ended, that is one of the struggles that many of our NGO partners are facing right now, is how they continue the success of their work. And also recognizing that often these interventions need to be adapted for ANHPI populations. So in the community garden example, in some of the areas besides Hawaii, the local community gardens were growing fruits and vegetables that the ANHPI population didn't eat. And so our partners in Atlanta, for example, really worked hard to make sure that the signage was in Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander languages, and that also there were opportunities to grow those fruits and vegetables that are familiar. And then finally, that important role of a national backbone institution, so the role that CESA and the Health Forum played in doing this work, we are hoping to adapt and apply to future projects. So I want to end by acknowledging the CDC for the support of our work, and particularly the three CDC staff that you see on the screen who really were such amazing partners for us, our colleagues at CESA, my fellow staff at the Health Forum, and most importantly, our 15 NGO partners. And so with that, I want to leave you with words of thanks from the area of the country where I grew up, which would be a thank all y'all growing up in Houston, Texas. And if there's additional information that you would like, please feel free to contact me by phone or email. Thank you.